First meeting of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee during the 30th legislative session will come to order. It is now 8:02 a.m., Tuesday, January 31st, in State Capitol Room 124. And our members present today, I have Co-Chair Representative Parrish. I have Representative Drummond. I have Representative Tallarico. I have Representative Rauscher. And I have Representative Westlake, and myself, Representative Fansler. We have a quorum to conduct business, and I would ask if you can please take the time to silence your cell phones for the duration of the meeting. Thank you. Also, before I begin, I'd like to thank Lori Rowland, the House Community and Regional Affairs Secretary, and Alex Bibi Judice from the Juno LIO for making sure we have sound and a transcript for all our committee meetings. Thank you very much, both of you. And for today's meeting, my staff, Mary Schlosser and Jill Yordi, seated to our left here, are here to help with any member needs for this committee meeting. We have two items on our agenda today, House Bill 8, Enforcement of Foreign Protective Orders, and House Bill 78, Indigenous Peoples Day. For our first order of business today, we are going to be hearing Version A, which is 30-LS0127. /A of the Draft Committee Substitute for HB 8, Enforcement of Foreign Protective Orders. Can I get a motion to take up version 30-LS0127 /A of the Committee Substitute for House Bill 8 as the working document?
I move that we adopt version LS0127 /A of House Bill 8 before the committee for the purposes of discussion.
All right, hearing no objections, we will take that up. The House Community and Regional Affairs Committee adopts version A of the committee substitute for House Bill 8 as the working document. This House bill is sponsored by House Speaker Edgemond, and I believe from Speaker Edgemond's house, or from his office, rather, we have Timothy Clark. Mr. Clark, before you begin, let me briefly explain the documents that members have received and should be in their binders. The version before us right now is version A. That's under your tab HB 8 bill. Behind that, we have a sponsor statement, followed by a tab with our sectional summary. And then finally, letters of support and our two fiscal notes that are going to be accompanying us. So, Mr. Clark, if you're ready to put yourself on the record and begin, I remind you to just introduce yourself for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tim Clark. I'm staff to Speaker Edgemond. If I may be so bold, I would like to point out for the record that the version of the bill before the committee is, in fact, the original version and is not a committee substitute. Essentially, HB 8 could be described as housekeeping in that it reconciles conflicts in existing state statute with federal law that takes precedent over those statutes. In 2004, a bill sponsored by Senators Murkowski and Begich eliminated what was known as the Alaska exemption from the Violence Against Women Act. This brought attention to the state's obligation to enforce protection orders issued by other jurisdictions, including other state, territorial, and tribal courts. As current statutes are written, law enforcement is only compelled to enforce a tribal or other state's protection order if it's been filed, that is, registered in a state court. Now that we're subject to the Violence Against Women Act, The state is required to enforce protection orders issued in other jurisdictions, even if the order has not been previously registered with the state court. It's a kind of streamlining effort in order to protect people. The bill also follows the recommendation of the Department of Law to more clarify that other jurisdictions include the courts of other states, the military tribunals, and tribal courts. Additionally, it provides a presumption of validity on the part of state law enforcement so that they are required to enforce a protection order issued in another jurisdiction so long as it appears authentic on its face, and that could be described as a measure to err on the side of caution in terms of protecting people. It's also important to note in the Department of Law's opinion that was issued in 2015 that even though these protection orders from other jurisdictions need not be registered with the state registry, it's a very good idea to do so anyway. It, to quote from the opinion, the registry gives officers access to tribal and foreign protection orders anywhere in Alaska, even if the victim does not have a copy of the order at hand. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions. I'd also note that we have two attorneys from the Department of Law to take technical questions, Mary Lundquist of the Civil Division and Casey Schroeder of the Criminal Division. It's been suggested to me that all questions be directed toward Mary Lundquist for the sake of efficiencies, and if something does come up in the criminal realm, she can defer to Casey Schroeder.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee? Perhaps maybe we'll take questions for Mr. Clark first, and then we'll go to Ms. Lundquist, if that's okay. Does anyone have any questions from the committee? Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to let Mr. Clark off the hook while we have it here. So, but to put it in a nutshell, make it a little simpler for everybody, what we're really doing here is these are concerns that we have about in other jurisdictions when there's been sexual assault, domestic violence, stalking. This will make sure that we have the ability here to enforce those without a full process of us. In other words, this is an immediate enforcement thing that we can do here in Alaska, and so the general idea behind this is support for those victims of those crimes and make sure that those don't continue. Right, we want to be expedient with this. Is that kind of in a nutshell where we're at, or at least the way I see it?
Representative Tallarico, through the chair, that's put very, very well. And an example would be, say, someone moving from Ohio who has a protection order, you know, in place against someone. They move to Alaska. They may not have taken the time or may not be aware of the requirement in statute to register the order. They're being menaced in some way by the person against whom the order was taken, and they need help. They need help immediately, and this is a way to ensure that that's legal and possible. So.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Clark, whose job is it to register the register the order? Is it the job of the victim, or do they need an attorney to register that order when they've moved into the Alaska jurisdiction?
My understanding, Representative Drummond, through the chair, is that it would be the holder of the protective order, the victim, so to speak.
Okay. And, it's
a matter of simply contacting a clerk of the court, and it's a fairly routine matter.
Thank you.
Representative Westlake.
Thank you, and through the chair, Mr. Clark. That's well and good, and I'm sure, you know, registering is always a good idea. Now, this may be more technical, but if they do register, or even if they don't, can you do a quick search through Aspen or through public safety records to see if there is one in place if they do register on the database? Say they did register over there. How is this recorded so a trooper out there in a village or a VPSO, whatever the case may be, is they can turn around and, as they would speak in their jargon, get a hit? How will the registration process work for them?
Representative Westlake, through the chair, the registration process is well established and has been for many years in the state. This bill makes it so that if for any reason someone has been unable or has failed to register their protective order from another jurisdiction or a tribal court, that enforcement can take place immediately anyway. The bill also adds a presumption of validity. So okay. If you're oftentimes someone who's taken out a protection order, they do in fact have the order in hard copy mm-hmm. in their possession. Okay. So conceivably they could be in a threatening situation, call law enforcement, have the order in hand, and even if it's an order from another jurisdiction, the bill includes a presumption of validity so that if it appears authentic on its face, law enforcement can proceed to enforce it. So it's really just a matter of expediency, of streamlining the protection of these people. So thank you.
Co-chair Parrish.
Thank you, and through the chair. Am I correct in interpreting this as saying that everywhere else in the United States is already on board with this and is already enforcing protection orders issued by other jurisdictions?
Co-chair Parrish, through the chair, that's exactly right. And I should emphasize that the state of Alaska is on board with this and is working under the requirements of the federal law. The problem here, what we're trying to solve here, are the contradictions that continue to exist in state statute. And that works not only, you know, in favor of victims, but also in favor of to the advantage of law enforcement, because while the statutes continue to contain conflicts, it could cause complications in, say, prosecutions going forward, where it could present ambiguities that are undesirable, say, in the prosecution of the case.
Thank you.
And excuse me, Mr. Chair, I should maybe add that if the attorneys from the Department of Law find anything in my testimony that should be clarified or corrected, they should jump right in. So.
Any further questions for Mr. Clark? Representative Rauscher?
Yes, through the chair, page 4, line 21, protective order issued in another jurisdiction that appears authentic on its face is presumed valid. So what's the procedure they're going to use for validating this? And do they need to validate anything?
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, as I've mentioned, that is a the reason behind that is to err on the side of caution, so that if someone were not to have registered the protection order from another jurisdiction, but if they are in a threatening situation, law enforcement arrives, they have their hard copy of the order in hand. Law enforcement is authorized to have a look at that hard copy, and if it looks legit, if it looks valid, you know, on its face, then they can proceed to enforce. And it exists in other states as a precaution in order to have the in order to give as much help and assistance to someone in a threatening situation as possible. And to put it plainly, those matters can be sorted out. The validity itself can be sorted out after the situation is brought under control and people are safe. So.
Follow-up?
Yes, please, through the chair. I understand what you're saying there, but sooner or later, it needs to be checked out, correct, or not? I'm just trying to clarify that part. I mean, is this going to be constantly thought of as well? I always thought it was, and that was just 12 months ago, and I still don't know.
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, certainly it would be... that matter would be settled in terms of its validity before any kind of, say, prosecution or otherwise would go forward.
And one more question to the chair. How do you address frivolous orders in this?
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, if the section of the Violence Against Women Act that authorizes what the bill is describing includes... certain criteria that a protection order from another jurisdiction must meet. That includes that the issuing court must have jurisdiction in the parties and the matter under the laws of the state, territory, or tribe, and that the issuing court must give reasonable notice and opportunity to the person against whom that order is sought in order for that person's due process to be protected. So there are clear criteria in terms of the justification for the order ever having been put in place to begin with. Not only the justification, but the due process involved.
Through the chair, any frivolous orders come across in history so far, or is there any sort of statistics on that?
I would, Representative Rauscher, through the chair, there's a possibility that that the attorneys from the Department of Law may be able to answer that. If not, I can promise you to consult with the Department of Public Safety and get back with you.
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, this is Mary Lundquist with the Attorney General's Office. I didn't quite hear what statistics you were looking for.
Through the chair?
Yeah.
Frivolous orders, whether whether there's ever been a history of frivolous accounts, you know, that have come across.
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, I am not aware of any frivolous accounts or frivolous use of protection orders. Casey Schroeder with the Criminal Division might be better able to answer specifics about protection orders.
Thank you.
Ms. Schroeder, would you like to perhaps come forth and put yourself on the record, present yourself with that, and any statistics you may have?
For the record, Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law, and I'm with the Criminal Division. Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, we are not aware of any instances of frivolous or perhaps fraudulent uses of protective orders in this context, and we don't have any statistics on that either, unfortunately.
Thank you.
Any further questions for either Mr. Clark, and now that we've also heard from Ms. Lundquist and Ms. Schroeder as well, any further questions from any committee members at this time? Co-Chair Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Mary Lundquist. I was wondering what approximately what magnitude we're looking at. How many people have foreign protective orders or protective orders from jurisdiction in the state of Alaska? Just a ballpark.
Representative to the chair, Casey Schroeder might be better able to answer the numbers of protection orders that are enforced.
Thank you, Mrs. Lundquist. So with respect, I'll direct my question to you.
Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General, again. Through the chair, Representative Parrish, we can get statistics for you on the overall number of protective orders and those that are registered with the court. I don't know if they're separated out between foreign and those issued by the state, but we can definitely try to get those numbers for you if you'd like.
Oh, that's all right. If you don't have them at hand, it's not vital. It's a pretty clear bill.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions from any committee members for any of our presenters? Okay, seeing no more questions, then I'm going to say thank you to Mr. Clark, to Ms. Lundquist, and Ms. Schroeder. And if you'll stay around just in case something pops up, that would be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Once more, this is Tim Clark, Staff Director Edgman, and I neglected to send his regrets in terms of not being able to be here this morning.
Thank you. And now we will take public testimony. Is there anyone online wishing to testify? Looks like we do not have anyone online other than our testifiers that have already spoken. And is there anyone located here in the room wishing to testify? All right. Seeing no one, I'm going to ask if there are any further questions from the committee or discussion. Representative Westlake.
Thank you. And through the chair, to all of us here, I really endorse and embrace this. I think this is very good legislation. Representative Roger brought up a good point, and I'd like to point out a lot of times what happens is, at the village level, where I live, if there's a tribal order out there, and someone wants to leave some kind of relationship and goes over to Fairbanks, you know, trying to get away and something, you know, the same situation happens over there, this is a quick stop. It addresses problems wherever it may be. A lot of times we do want to keep the problems at a local level, and unfortunately if they do move to a big place like Fairbanks or something, trying to get away, and this addresses that immediately. So thank you. Thank you for this bill.
Thank you. And thank you, Representative Tallarico. We will officially close public testimony for the record at this time, since we've heard none. Any other discussion or questions regarding HB 8 from any members of our committee? And if I can take an indulgence as the chairman, or coach for today at least, I would also like to offer my endorsement of this bill. I think it's something that's really kind of cleaning up current law that we have that we're actually already doing and making sure that we're not having any kind of issues between the federal law that we're operating with and between our state laws. So I think that this is a good bill to get behind, and I'm firmly in support of it, and I appreciate our speaker bringing it forward. So, okay. All right. Any more discussion? Are there any motions from the committee?
I move House Bill 8, version LS0127/A, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
To the chair. I know he's asked for information, and they said they would provide it. I'm not up to speed on everything I know about this, and I would just like to ask for one more, a little bit of time between now and the next hearing to be able to look at it a little further, if that would please you. If that's not possible, then I withdraw my request.
Representative Tallarico.
Mr. Chair, just I'll object for discussion purposes.
Okay, so we're on the record for an objection. All right, so now we have our objection.
Thank you.
We're going to redo that again. So now, after our objection, we're having our discussion. You're requesting. Okay. Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to speak to your concern, it really does seem like a housekeeping measure just to make sure that all of our statutes are more or less on the same page, you know, that there's no conflict between state and federal law, which I'm really not in favor of having too many conflicts there. I did withdraw my request for information simply because it would eat up some of their time, and of course they've got valuable things to be doing in the Attorney General's office. Well, what can I say? I'd urge your support of the bill. However, you do always have the right to write no recommendation, and it will again come before the floor in the second reading, at which point it could be amended if between now and then you learn something that you disapproved of in it or believe that it needed to be fixed. Thank you.
Representative Westlake.
Yes, and through the chair, I'm still not used to Mason's rules. However, I'd like to ask the indulgence of the state to sit here. If there are questions, we can ask them now. As I understood it a little while ago, we're just out of compliance with federal law. We're trying to do this, and I heard the state is already doing these things. We're just trying to catch the books on something we're basically already doing now. And if I could have your indulgence, and we have the state back up here to answer any questions, I certainly would appreciate it.
And I'm going to ask for a brief at ease. I want to clarify something else as well, if that's okay, off the record. So brief at ease. So if we can, we have Mr. Clark, Ms. Schroeder, and Ms. Lundquist. Are you still on the line?
Mary Lundquist is still online.
Okay, thank you. We will reopen discussion and questions for our presenters. Does anyone have any questions or discussion points? Representative Rauscher, excuse me.
I guess what I'm looking at, up to the chair, thank you. I guess what I'm looking at here is I've got a history on this page, and there's some no recommendations from three representatives, and I was just wondering what that problem was. Am I overlooking something that I need to know? And that's the only reason I'm wanting a little more time. It has nothing to do with that I don't care, or I don't want to see this pass, or I don't want to see. I would like to actually vote yes for it. That's my question. I see three names there, and they seem to I respect all their opinions, and I was just wondering whether I could find some time to find out what they saw that I don't see here.
Sure. Do you have any questions?
No questions other than that's my...
Okay, Representative Westlake.
Yes, and thank you, Representative Rosher. I appreciate those things. Now, my question is to legal out here. Are we currently compliant, or are we already complying with the federal law on this? And are we out of... Are we trying to make Alaska compliant with this? Is that the... What we're doing today, we're trying to catch Alaska up to federal law on this particular issue when it comes to domestic violence and protective orders.
Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General, Department of Law, through the Chair, Representative Westlake, that's correct. The federal law already requires us to do this, so what this bill does is it cleans up direct conflicts that are already basically unconstitutional because of the Supremacy Clause. And so that when we are on the ground, we can the process is streamlined. Really, what this is going to do is help with prosecutions, because the current law, the way it reads, is an element of the offense that the protective order be registered, and the federal law says no, we can't do that anymore. That cannot be a requirement. So, what this is going to do is, when it comes to prosecuting people for violating protective order, it's really going to help us out when the law is clear and it matches the federal law, and we're all doing what we're supposed to do. It'll hopefully cut down on litigation, and so that we can just focus on protecting victims.
Through the chair, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Jordan.
Thank you. I'm glad you said, Ms. Schroeder, that we're interested in protecting victims. And I think that's it's of the utmost importance that we hurry this bill along and not delay it for any reason and just get with the program and make sure victims are protected. Thank you.
Any other questions for our recalled speakers? Okay. Hearing none, we're going to allow you to return to your seat. Thank you very much. And we will go back into questions and discussion amongst our panel. To be fair, Representative Rauscher, it is the intent of the chair to move this bill on today because we do have a second committee of referral, and with your acknowledgments, I appreciate your willingness to do due diligence and certainly would never advocate against that. With that in mind, since there is another committee of referral, would be the chair's intention that you have the time to get your research done and perhaps continue to track it as it follows its path through and still suggest amendments and work with the sponsor at that time. So, yes. Representative Tallarico.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I removed my objection.
Okay. All right, so we have a motion that has been presented. We now have no objection. Representative Rauscher, you wish to put an objection on for yourself, or are you?
No, thank you. I'm good, thank you.
Okay. Fair enough.
Mr. Chair.
So, any more discussion on the motion? Okay. Ms. Clark, if you can give us a roll call. Or we don't because we have. We're good. Okay. So there's no objection. We're going to pass this bill from committee, and I think send it with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal notes, and it will next move on to the House Judiciary Committee.
Move from committee. Has
yeah.
Justin said that
yeah.
Already.
All right, we'll take a brief at ease to sign the bill documents. ready to come back on the record. All right. If the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee will now come back to order, and we'll come back on the record. For our second order of business today, we are hearing version 30-LS0368-A of House Bill 78, Indigenous Peoples Day. Representative Westlake and Elizabeth Rexford will be discussing this legislation. The version before us is the original. Behind that, if you're looking in your binder, we have our sponsor statement, our sectional summary, support, and other documents, including a fiscal note. Representative Westlake and Ms. Rexford, please come forward to put yourself on the record and begin. And Representative Westlake, if you'd like to present from your seat or the witness stand, it's your choice.
Thank you and good morning. Beside me is First Alaskans fellow Elizabeth Rexford, and I thank First Alaskans. It's been a pleasure having her here, and it's a great day for us Indigenous people. So thank you very much. House Bill 78 establishes the second Monday of October of each year as Indigenous Peoples Day. This is the same as Columbus Day. And while it's not recognized by the state of Alaska as an official holiday, it is a federal holiday. The bill is not an attempt to tear down or destroy Columbus Day in any way, fashion, or form. Rather, this bill intends a unification and celebration of us as Native peoples. On a day that recognizes some of the first Europeans of the Americas, we also can be recognizing that we have always lived here. I don't think that anyone would argue against the significant cultural influence Indigenous peoples have had, especially here in Alaska. There are more federally recognized tribes than the entire lower 48 combined. That's us. So, House Bill 78 does not create a new state holiday. It creates a day of recognition, a day of honor. Placing it on the same day as Columbus Day recognizes the intermingling of cultures that make Alaska such a great and vibrant state. It honors Alaska's rich cultural history, and this day of recognition is a day of celebration, the celebration of all our cultures that we have here in Alaska, and especially us, the Indigenous people. So we thank you for hearing this bill, and if you have any questions, we'll be glad to answer them, and thank you.
Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Rauscher.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative. Why was Columbus Day picked?
Pardon me?
Why was Columbus Day picked?
It's a day when we were supposedly discovered. We never knew we were lost. And it's a great day. It really is. I mean, it was the time when you had the Western culture, if you will, and our culture meeting for the first time, and it's an appropriate day. We can celebrate it from either side. It's all about multiculturalism, getting along as people on the same land, and it just seems appropriate.
Follow up, Mr. Rauscher? Or Representative Rauscher, excuse me?
Not at this moment.
Any other questions from this committee? I'll ask one, if I may. Correct me if I'm wrong. We have had celebrations of Indigenous Peoples Day before the past couple of years, and those also occurred the second Monday of October. Is that correct?
To the chair, yes. For the last 2 years, the governor has signed a proclamation
Can you just state your name
for the record? Elizabeth Rexford, Bruce Hoskins fellow for Representative Westlake. Yes, for the last 2 years, Governor Walker's office has signed a proclamation designating the second Monday of October as Indigenous Peoples Day. And also, Mayor Berkowitz of the municipality of Anchorage has also done that. He started that in 2015. And also it has been requested in prior years that we do make this or submit the second Monday as October for this to make it a permanent day of recognition for Alaska.
Representative Talarico.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I've certainly appreciated having several discussions with the sponsor of the bill, my friend from District 40, and maybe just so that he can clarify for the record, because I know that we have had within our packet, we have some letters of support that would indicate that the sponsor is attempting to eliminate Columbus Day, and I don't believe that's really the case. He has certainly made it very clear to me that this will add to the celebration of the day, and I do appreciate his multicultural approach to the celebration of that day. If my understanding that we give recognition to the very important cultures and different organizations that we have here in the state of Alaska. So I don't want to put words in the sponsor's mouth, but if Representative Westlake, if you'd respond to that, please.
And this is Representative Westlake again. Thank you, Representative Talarico. And I'd like to point out, like in Kotzebue, one of the things I have done is gone out to get good morning in different languages. In Kotzebue alone, where I'm from. And there were 17 different indigenous languages. We had everything from Norwegian to Rwandan, and it's just such a celebration. Above the Arctic Circle, you have this kind of diversity, and it's a wonderful thing. It makes us all so much better.
Any further questions for either Representative Westlake or Ms. Rexford? Seeing or hearing none, I am going to excuse Ms. Rexford and excuse Representative Westlake back to his chair over here. And we will now take public testimony. It looks like we have one person online. Ms. Lindsay Leyland from Dillingham, when you provide your testimony, can you please state your name and affiliation for the record? We are asking that public testimony be limited to 2 minutes per person so that we can make sure we can hear from everyone. Ms. Leyland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the committee, through the chair. My name is Lindsay Leyland. I'm from Dillingham, Alaska. I'm a lifelong Alaskan and proud to be a resident of Bristol Bay. I'm testifying today in support of House Bill 78, establishing Indigenous Peoples Day. It's the second Monday in October. And I'd like to reference the sponsored bill statement just because I think the first line of the second paragraph is spot on, in that Indigenous people are an integral part of the spiritual, cultural, linguistic, and scientific and historical fabric of the state of Alaska and Americans at large. I have seen and heard arguments against this proposed recognition, citing the exclusivity of naming the day Indigenous Peoples Day, and claiming that it's exclusive to all non-Indigenous people, which frankly I think is quite absurd. With that, I'd like to point out the status quo Columbus Day actually celebrates and recognizes a single white male whose actions have led to widespread genocide and who was not actually the first European to reach the Americas in discovery. Here we have the opportunity to recognize and to celebrate all the women, men, and children who are the original inhabitants of our state and whose culture is vital in our state's founding. And for those who may oppose such a bill, I think it's important to look across party lines, to even to our state leaders at the federal level, Senator Lisa Murkowski actually proudly wears her cusbuck in the public and professional settings, and it's evident that this is a nonpartisan issue, but rather one that reveals qualities of discrimination and racism in those who might oppose it. And so I'm just would like to voice my support of House Bill 78, establishing the second Monday in October as Indigenous Peoples Day. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, and good luck with your decision making.
Koyana Ms. Leyland. Doesn't look like we have anyone else online. Perhaps you can correct me if that's the case.
This is the Dillingham LA. We do have one more person in the room who would like to sign up.
Okay, if we can have that person come and state their name and their affiliation on the record, and they'll have 2 minutes.
Hi, this is Alana Hurley. I'm from Bristol Bay, and I'm born and raised Yupik in this region, and I agree with everything the person just testified about before me, and the only thing I'm going to add is that I'm in full support of this bill, and I really think it's about recognizing real history and different perspectives in history that aren't, you know, that isn't taught in mainstream society and schools. And I'm a firm believer that there's no way we can really move forward and heal some of the divides, racial divides in this state and nation, without recognizing the injustices of the past. And I think across the nation, people are choosing to replace Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day, because we're talking about somebody from an Indigenous perspective who was one of the first perpetrators of genocide in this country, someone who's been compared to Hitler. And when we are celebrating that in this state, what are we teaching our children to celebrate? And who are we teaching them is worth celebrating? And so I think I'll just end my thought there that, you know, this is really a movement across the nation to recognize real history and to celebrate the first people of this nation. And as the state that has the most tribes across the country, I think it would be amazing and make a great statement about where how Alaska values its Indigenous people. Thank you.
And is that everyone in Dillingham?
Yeah, that's all we have. Thank you.
Okay, hold on just a second to see if we have any questions here. Does anybody from our committee have any questions for either Ms. Leyland or Ms. Hurley? Seeing none, we will thank them for their testimony. And we will move on and ask if there is anyone in the room that wishes to testify. Seeing no one, we will... we have picked up one more person online. We'll go back to our online testimony. Mr. Wood, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
And can you please state your name and your affiliation for the record, and then you'll have 2 minutes.
Yep, of course. My name is Jonathan Wood, and I'm just speaking on behalf of myself. I live here in Juneau, Alaska, and have considered Alaska my home for nearly a decade. First and foremost, I'd like to thank the committee for hearing my testimony and the others today, and for considering this bill. Regarding the bill, I'd like to voice my strong support in favor of House Bill 78, designating the second Monday in October as Indigenous Peoples Day in the state of Alaska. Alaska's population is nearly 15% American Indian and Alaska Native, by far the highest of any state in the U.S. Just like an elaborate Chilkat blanket, Alaska's various indigenous cultures are intricately woven throughout the history of this great state and territory prior to our statehood. Unfortunately, as in the rest of the U.S., this history is not always pretty or nice. It is, in fact, filled with much cruelty and ugliness. I think it's important to officially recognize and call attention to the terrible losses suffered by the Native American peoples and their culture through disease, warfare, massacre, and forced assimilation. By designating a specific day to promote Native American culture and history, we can celebrate the rich traditions and continue the healing process for Alaska Natives. And as we focus on this healing element of Indigenous Peoples Day, we'll become better global citizens with an awareness of the continued struggles and experiences of other peoples and groups throughout the rest of the world. Thank you for your time, and thank you for hearing this bill.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Wood. Do any committee members have any questions for Mr. Wood? All right, seeing or hearing none, we appreciate that. Is there anyone else online that we're missing? All right, and since no one has entered the room since my last appeal, I am going to, at this time, close public testimony on HB 78 and open up discussion from committee members regarding HB 78.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm noting that many of the letters in support reference House Bill 275, which was my bill in the previous legislature, which did pass the House. It did not pass the Senate, however, so it's good to have continuing support. And I think this is an important day to recognize for our state, and I believe that the committee should move it forward. Does it have another committee of a reference?
No.
Is it going to State Affairs?
That's not here, no.
I think it's going straight to...
Okay, straight to the floor.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm in support, Mr. Chair.
Any other discussion?
Brief at ease.
Representative, brief at ease. All right, any further discussion on this bill? All right, I will, Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just I know that we've had testimony, and I just want to reiterate that I don't see the bill's intent as removing a federal holiday and adding a new one to replace it, but it's maybe I've missed it, but I think this is inclusive to October the 12th. And once again, I would say I appreciate the sponsor. In the discussions that we've had, he's putting forward a valiant effort, as he had stated, to include everyone in a celebratory day and give recognition to the very important spiritual and cultural things that we all enjoy from our Alaska Native population here, as well as the rest of the history of our country. So I would say that as we move forward, and we know that throughout our history there have certainly been, you couldn't say that there were anything less than atrocities and injustices that have happened. I think our intent here is to move forward to try and avoid those things in the future and provide that recognition and avoid those things not just for particular groups of people, but for everyone. And I appreciate that effort. I think that's a valiant effort. I support that as well. So I just think it's important on the record that everyone understands we're not trying to replace another holiday. We're going to make I think the full intent here is to make this inclusive. So I think at least in my mind, I want to make sure that that's clear. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Tallarico. Any other discussion? I will take my indulgence as the chair, and I will also say that, one, I appreciate your comments, Representative Tallarico. I think you hit the nail on the head with your view of it is my view. But two, I just want to say Koyana to Representative Westlake, and I could not be more supportive of this bill. It was a great honor and with great pride that I was able to co-sponsor this bill. as a representative from a district that is a majority Alaskan Native. I think that this is the least we can do and to recognize all the amazing contributions that we've received from Indigenous peoples from around the world, you know, really when it gets down to it. And I think that I couldn't be more supportive of this and Koyana. So, any other discussion? Well, once again, it is our intent to move forward with this bill today. Are there any motions?
I move House Bill 78, version LS0368-A, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Hearing no objections, we will move this House Bill 78, and we will now... We're going to stand, unless there's other orders of business that anyone has, we're going to stand adjourned, but we're not going to have anybody leave because we all need everybody to sign our referral form here. So we will position someone by the door here to make sure that that happens.
Get that protective order out from
we'll
the previous.
Take a brief at ease here while we pass this around. We are back on the record, and we have all of our paperwork accounted for, and I wish to commend our committee for excellent work today, and we will stand adjourned at 9:12 a.m.
All right.